night and dream that the world had turned around. All our hopes had come to be, and the people gathered around. They offer all they can bring, and nobody went with that. Only learn a song to sing. The revolution starts now.
Good afternoon, Richmond. Welcome to Indie Media Live, one of the most progressive half hours on the radio, because we have no corporate sponsorship and no corporate control. I hope you'll stay tuned to hear what a difference this makes in bringing you the news. I'm your host, Rebecca Farris, and I'm here every Tuesday introducing you to people in our community who are passionately involved in the issues and causes that directly affect you and your family. We have a great show for you today. Chesapeake Climate Action Network is in the house. Before we get to that, though, I want to give you a couple of event announcements. Great Balls of Fire and the highly acclaimed IMAX film Hubble open this weekend, Saturday, May the 28th, at the Science Museum of Virginia. They're our neighbors right down the street, 2500 West Broad. This film is going to take you from the heart of the Orion Nebula and the Milky Way to the edge of the observable universe. For more information, 864-1400, or you can go to their website, smv.org. On Saturday, June 11th, local activists and artists are holding a benefit concert to help rebuild African communities traumatized by genocide. The show is going to be held at the First Unitarian Universalist Church, 1000 Blanton Avenue, and it's going to start at 7 p.m. The performance will feature well-known master drummers and percussionists playing African, Brazilian, and Caribbean rhythms. Hotel X is going to be there, Drums No Guns, other special guests. And at the very end, there's going to be a community drum circle for Africa to conclude the event. So if you want to find out more about that, rpec.org. This is sponsored by the Richmond Peace Education Center. And you also, I'm sure, have your calendars marked already for the Vegetarian Festival, which is this year going to be on June the 18th. We'll be having more information about that event coming up on Indie Media Live in the next couple of weeks. You can also listen to this show again tomorrow. It is rebroadcast. Indie Media Live is rebroadcast every Wednesday from 2:30 until 3 o'clock on our live stream, WRIR.org. And we are going to link to this show at our blog, indiemedialive.blogspot.com, shortly after this show. So you can listen to us over and over and over again. Thank you so much for being here today. I want now to introduce you to the two people who are in the house with Chesapeake Climate Action Network, one of my favorite organizations. Chesapeake Climate Action Network's Virginia Policy Coordinator, Chelsea Harnish, is here. Welcome back, Chelsea.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah, Chelsea works with the Virginia team to establish legislative priorities, and she develops the necessary expertise on legislative issues. Chelsea began her career with Chesapeake Climate Action Network as the regional campaign coordinator for Central and Southern Virginia, building grassroots support for issues while pushing the legislative agenda forward at the state level. And before joining Wind, America's first proposed offshore wind farm off the coast of Massachusetts, she holds a Bachelor of Science degree in Marine Science from the University of South Carolina and a Master's degree from Boston University's Marine Science Program in Woods Hole. I think a lot of people have probably heard about Cape Wind, Chelsea.
I think so. The name is, it definitely has name recognition since it took 10 years to permit that particular project.
My goodness. We're going to be talking later on why there are roadblocks to these wind projects in a minute. But first, let me introduce our listeners to Hannah Wiegard. Hannah is the Hampton Roads Area Organizer with the Chesapeake Climate Action Network. She's a Richmond area native, an alumna of William & Mary, with a background in environmental science and policy. Her work concentrates on community outreach with the goal of building a base of support for developing offshore wind power in Virginia. I'm so glad you both are here, and I'm so grateful that we have the chance to talk about wind power and about Virginia's clean energy future. First of all, let's jump right in with the event that's coming up on June the 4th. Can you guys tell us about that?
Sure. So the idea will be to give Virginia residents a way to learn about our best source of renewable energy here in Virginia. Right now, we are seeing some issues from climate change. We're seeing rising temperatures, extreme weather events. Spilled oil is still wreaking havoc in the Gulf a full year after the BP disaster. And these are all indications that climate change is an ever-growing threat and that we need to move away from dirty fossil fuels. Since offshore wind power is one of our state's best ways to fight climate change and to create thousands of good local jobs, that's why we're hosting the first ever Citizens Summit on offshore wind power in Virginia. It'll be called Energize Virginia. We're doing this on Saturday, June the 4th in Richmond at the beautiful center stage downtown, and we'll hear from top environmental leaders, elected officials, business people about why wind power is important, the benefits of it, and really how to take it from an idea to make it reality. And we are really planning to have fun as well as make history.
And citizens are invited to participate.
Yes, absolutely. We are working to get as many as 200 citizens, grassroots folks, to turn out and be a part of it, help us map out the future of wind power in Virginia.
June the 4th, 10 to 3:30 at Richmond Center Stage.
That's absolutely right.
Let's talk a little bit about the Chesapeake Climate Action Network before we jump into the details of wind, offshore wind in particular. What can you tell us about your group, its history, and what it's doing?
Sure. So the Chesapeake Climate Action Network actually started in Maryland in 2001. We have a team of folks that work in Maryland as well as Virginia, and also we work at the federal level in Washington, D.C. So we're more of a regional group than a state group. And our focus is specifically on climate change. So we only focus on issues that are going to stop climate change, which happen to be all energy issues. So we work on coal, stopping mountaintop removal. We work on energy efficiency. We work on offshore wind. So those are the three main campaigns that we've worked on in the last few years here in Virginia and then also in Maryland. They also have a very strong offshore wind campaign that they're working on, and they're also working on stopping natural gas fracking in Maryland as well. It's not as big of an issue here, but something that might be coming down the pike in the next couple of months to years here.
In Virginia?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've been hearing and reporting on this show about the squeaks and squawks to open Virginia to uranium mining, mm-hmm. but I hadn't heard about fracking.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. We'll have to do another show on that.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. We got to get this clean energy thing down.
Exactly.
Hannah, I know that other groups are working with you on this event on June the 4th as well. Who are some of the groups that Chesapeake Climate Action Network is partnering with?
Absolutely. We have help from the Green Jobs Alliance. They are coming at this from the clean energy job creation standpoint because there's such terrific potential for jobs installing, maintaining wind turbines in Virginia. The Sierra Club is also involved, as well as the Virginia Interfaith Center for Virginia Interfaith Power and Light, rather. They are interested in the faith perspective and stewardship of creation, and it's wonderful to have that as part of our campaign.
This might be kind of an obvious question, but why is Chesapeake Climate Action Network focused on advocating for offshore wind power?
This is actually an interesting question.
Yeah.
Chesapeake Climate Action Network, as Chelsea said, we're foremost a regional organization for climate protection. We're fairly unique in that way. Wind power is pollution-free. There's zero chance of the fuel spilling or causing an explosion, and it doesn't produce any greenhouse gas emissions. As coal plants have to be retired, brought offline at the end of their life cycle, you might say, we can meet our needs using a clean and renewable resource that's located close to customers and is abundant in Virginia. We do make the distinction between offshore and onshore wind. Compared to land-based wind, sea-based wind is taking advantage of a more abundant resource. It's also less likely to run into a couple of commonly cited drawbacks of wind power in general, including the noise from the whooshing of the turbines and the visibility of the turbines because they would be so distant from the shore, as well as interference with wildlife that's minimized if you're talking about a sea-based wind project.
We reported on Indie Media Live right after Fukushima that Japan was getting a source of electricity from its offshore wind farms, and that they went through tsunami. They went through earthquake, and they were still putting out clean electricity. I thought that was such an important point to make about offshore wind. Did you read about that?
Yes, and it did strike me what a consistent and endless resource we have here in wind power.
Yeah, and is Virginia a great state for wind power, offshore wind?
Yes, absolutely. It's an untapped resource so far, but we are a coastal state. It's a very abundant resource. There are 3,200 megawatts of capacity out there, actually, which is really huge. And just from the first project we take on, we can power 700,000 homes with clean energy, or it's also equivalent to powering 3.4 million electric vehicles, if you think of it that way. We're also well-positioned in other ways here in Virginia. We have a deep water port that's available to us and an experienced labor force to get ready to go to work.
Shovel ready.
For sure.
as Obama said. I am wondering, I read about Dominion Virginia Power as an example, selling a lot of the electricity or some of the electricity that's generated in Virginia to other states. Is that happening now? Do you know anything about that, Chelsea? And how would that fit in with the offshore wind? Could we keep our wind power here, or would that be?
That's a great question, and we would hope that they would keep it here. They do have a voluntary standard, a renewable portfolio standard, that they have to meet here in Virginia, and so clearly building an offshore wind farm would help them to meet that standard. They have to do, it's voluntary.
Yeah, it's voluntary,
they have to.
Okay.
It's voluntary. They can choose to do 15% by 2025, and they actually get a bonus incentive to meet those goals. So it is a good program for them to move forward on, and it also makes sense for them. They, being our major utility, we really need them on board in order for the industry itself to flourish and survive here in Virginia. So they are, we've actually just launched a campaign, VA for Wind, with the coalition partners that Hannah mentioned. And at our press conference on May 10th, we just talked about some of the barriers to offshore wind, and we do see them as a barrier. They say that they're interested in offshore wind, and it is something that they are having conversations about, which is great. But they also say at the same time, it's too costly, and it's not realistic for right now. So these are things that we need to push back on because, again, as the biggest utility, they really need to be on board in order to make offshore wind happen in Virginia.
If you've just tuned in, it is 16 minutes before the hour. This is Indie Media Live, and I'm your host, Rebecca Ferris, talking with the Chesapeake Climate Action Network's Virginia Policy Coordinator, Chelsea Harnish, and Hannah Wiegard, the Hampton Roads Area Organizer with the Chesapeake Climate Action Network. We're talking about Virginia and its clean energy future and the ideas of offshore wind farms. I'm wondering, you said that they were saying that that Dominion Virginia Power is saying that wind is too costly and not right now. Neither one of those points make any sense to me. Could you help our listeners understand a little bit about where they're coming from, maybe, or what's sure. going on?
Sure. Right at this very moment, there is no offshore wind projects off our coast. However, Europe has been doing offshore wind projects since 1991. So, I mean, we're going over 20 years that we're well behind Europe. China has already announced projects that they're building and that they're planning to do.
And as we mentioned, Japan.
And Japan. Yeah. And, you know, there are many different countries in Europe that are already doing Denmark, London. I always do that. The UK, Ireland, they all have wind farms that are going strong. And so while it may not exist here, it certainly is a reality that can exist and should exist, and we should move forward. So when they make that point, it's almost a moot point to me, because we just need the ingenuity, and America is known for its ingenuity, so it's just a non-starter.
We couldn't use the same technology?
Absolutely, mm-hmm. We could, and that's the thing, is that a lot of the companies that are talking about building projects, and I should mention that there are a lot of proposals from Massachusetts all the way down to North Carolina. There are people that want to put a steel in the ground, if you will, for different projects and different proposals, and they're bringing over folks from Europe that have done that, that have the knowledge and the know-how. So definitely we can work with them. There's a huge opportunity.
Hannah, what would be the effect on electric bills for Virginia customers when we build the wind farm? I'm not going to say if, when we build the wind farms.
When that does happen.
Yeah, when that happens.
For any new generation source, any project in Virginia, the energy utility that is bringing the power online will have to pass along those costs to their ratepayers, their customers. But we have to remember that unlike coal or natural gas, the fuel for a wind turbine isn't an expensive commodity. It's free. And since you don't have this price volatility as you would on something like coal or natural gas, wind power is a stable and reliable, affordable energy source in the long term. And that's going to help save Virginia households money down the road.
And we did a lot of reporting on the show about the process to license that new coal burning plant that they're building down in Southwest, and I think we're all paying for that now as well.
We are. Actually, I was just going to say, Dominion Virginia Power is actually going before the State Corporation Commission for four different rate riders. One is for fuel costs. So again, as Hannah mentioned, with wind, they won't be going before the SEC asking for an increase in fuel costs because there is no fuel for an offshore wind farm. They are also asking for two riders for generation, one for a natural gas plant that they're building in the Shenandoah Valley area, and the other in the Southwest coal plant that you just mentioned. And then they're also asking for a rate hike for transmissions, which is a different thing. But if they get all four of those rate hikes, they're going to be adding $13 to each of our bills every single month.
Ouch. Considering how high they already are.
Right.
So, yeah. Well, I've said this before. I'm going to say it again. To me, offshore wind seems like a no-brainer. Other than Dominion Virginia Power, as Power's objections, what's standing in the way?
The governor is also focused on making Virginia the East Coast energy capital, but we'd like to see him actually push to make Virginia the clean energy capital. He always talks about an all-of-the-above energy approach, which I can understand being the governor of a coal state, but we see that more as the past, and we'd like to move forward with the future. We have ample opportunity, and there's a tremendous amount of job potential, especially in the Hampton Roads area where Hannah works, for supply chain, for the different parts, for different companies. And we'd really just like to move forward and talk more about a clean energy capital of the East Coast, not just an all of the above.
And these are long-term permanent jobs, not the kinds of jobs that come with the construction and then disappear.
Definitely. VCERC, which is the Virginia Coastal Energy Research Consortium, which is a collaboration of universities throughout Virginia. They were funded by the General Assembly to do a study on offshore wind and its potential. And they show that over the lifespan of a project, which is 20 to 25 years, it could supply 10,000 jobs. And that includes construction, but it also includes long-term maintenance operation and also the supply chain side. There are about 2,000 to 3,000 components to a single turbine, which a lot of people don't even realize, and they all need to be manufactured and produced, and they could be produced right here in Virginia.
If you've just tuned in, it is 10 minutes before the hour. This is Indy Media Live. I'm Rebecca Ferris, and I'm talking with the Chesapeake Climate Action Network's Virginia Policy Coordinator, Chelsea Harnish, and Hannah Wiegard, the Hampton Roads Area Organizer with Chesapeake Climate Action Network. Chelsea, the last time you were here, you told our listeners about a solar bill that was going through the General Assembly. Can you update us?
Yes, that bill actually established a revolving loan program for homeowners to put solar panels on their rooftops. And our exciting news is that not only did the bill pass the General Assembly unanimously, it is also going to a bill signing ceremony with the governor on Wednesday, June 15th.
My goodness, congratulations.
Yes, we're very excited. It's the first bill that we've actually had ever get this far. So we're pretty excited.
Is the bill signing ceremony on June 15th open to all of us?
It is. It is open to the public. It's being held at the VCU School of Business, and it's happening from 11:45 to 12:30. And we'd love to have folks come out and show their support for the fact that a renewable energy bill has passed the General Assembly and will be signed before our very eyes.
That's amazing. I'm so excited. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about that bill and its provisions?
Sure. So once the revolving loan program is established, which through the bill signing ceremony, what will happen is the Department of Mines, Minerals, and Energy, which is a state government agency, they will be the ones that control the loan program. So once this becomes law, they will establish the program that they think makes the most sense. And they've done this in the past. When we've received stimulus funding from the federal government, they established an energy efficiency rebate program, which I'm sure your listeners are well aware of. That's more like an Energy Star program. If you got a new Energy Star appliance and you got a rebate through this program, and Department of Mines, Minerals, and Energy administered that program. So they're very well equipped and with the know-how to do these kinds of programs. They will create the program, and then they will put information on their website, which I think it's DMME.gov, but if not, you can Google Department of Mines, Minerals, and Energy. We will also be alerting our members when the program is up, so if folks want to join our mailing list at ChesapeakeClimate.org, that's another opportunity to learn more about the program.
And I'm wondering what kind of legislation is coming down the pike for next year. We have a few minutes left.
Okay, That's a great question. We are thinking of ways to fund the solar program now that it's become reality. So we're wondering or looking at maybe a license plate idea. You know, Virginia has lots of license plates out there. So what's one more?
Yeah, and that's one thing I would like to remind our listeners of is that maybe one of the reasons, I don't want to be too cynical, but maybe one of the reasons why this passed effortlessly is because it's not taking a dime from taxpayers.
Correct.
Yes, and so it has to be funded.
Correct. Yes. The fund it's a voluntary funding scheme. And what it is just anyone who lives in Virginia can donate money. They can donate through their utility bills, or they can donate directly through the Department of Mines, Minerals, and Energy website once they have that established to help people put solar panels on their roofs. And then it's a revolving loan program so that you pay the money back at low interest so that other people have an opportunity to put solar panels on their roofs as well. So that's one piece, just looking at creative ways to fund that program. And then the second piece of legislation that we'll be working on will be related to offshore wind. and related to some of the barriers that we've already mentioned, we just need to make the legislative process more friendly to offshore wind and just remove some of those obstacles. We're still formulating plans, but we're looking at models of other states like New Jersey and Delaware and just getting it started here, what's already been happening in other states.
Anna, what are some ways, Chelsea mentioned listeners can sign up for the listserv at ChesapeakeClimate.org. What are some other ways that listeners can get involved with Chesapeake Climate Action Network?
Oh, so this is what gets me really excited, being an organizer. It's so easy to get involved. The Energize Virginia Summit is coming up real soon, and you can register online through our website for that. It's our website, ChesapeakeClimate.org, ORG, is also where you can find out more information, read up on these important issues that Virginia has before us, and sign on to our petition. The petition that we're working on currently is to ask Dominion Power to be a leader and to invest in an offshore wind farm. I won't be able to resist making a play on words that the power is really with Dominion in this particular situation, and we would like to get 10,000 names on our petition by the end of the year, and that number 10,000 corresponds with the number of clean energy jobs we can create in Virginia. So it's a great symbol, a great representation of what we're fighting for, and so you can help us to get to that 10,000 number by signing on online.
And can you tell our listeners one more time about the event on June the 4th?
Absolutely. This event is a grassroots celebration of our opportunity for offshore wind power in Virginia. It's called the Energize Virginia Summit on Offshore Wind Power. It's Saturday, June the 4th, 10:30 to 3:30 at Center Stage in downtown Richmond.
And people can go to Chesapeake Climate dot org to find out more about this event, to sign up, to find out more about the work of the Chesapeake Climate Action Network. You know, we have a couple of minutes left. I wonder if each of you would feel comfortable just briefly giving us a little bit of an idea of how you came to this important work. Chelsea?
I'll go first. Never mind. So here, I grew up in the Richmond area. My parents used to take me on walks around some local trails around Point of Rocks Park, Pocahontas Park, and I developed a real love for the outdoors. And since then, in school, I had several great teachers. We had one in middle school who was growing submerged aquatic vegetation in our classroom in a tank, and it was fantastic to be able to help nurture that. And the students were going to end up going on a trip to plant it, and that's when I really started to understand that we needed to take care of our wild places, and that they weren't necessarily going to take care of themselves after the damage that we had done. And so after that, in college, I started to take part in wildflower planting and ivy poles to try to get our campus on track for sustainability, and we actually even started to organize and voted to tax ourselves and institute a green fee on campus to pay for some energy efficiency improvements.
And that's the College of William & Mary?
Yeah, at William & Mary in Williamsburg. And
That's great. And Chelsea, what about you? We literally have 1 minute.
My background is in marine science, and so I've always been interested in water issues and cleaning up the bay. I'm from Maryland, so cleaning up the Chesapeake Bay is always a big issue growing up, and just working on those kinds of issues. And from there, learning about that, really, if you care about global warming or climate change, that it's more energy and you need to focus on that. And so it's interesting that I'm kind of coming back to my marine roots in a way by working on offshore wind. So I'm working on energy, fighting climate change, and also out in the ocean at the same time.
Well, we're real grateful to both of you and all the work that you do and to the Chesapeake Climate Action Network. You can hear a rebroadcast of this show tomorrow at our live stream, WRIR.org, at 2:30, and we will link to it from our blog, indiemedialive.blogspot.com. On behalf of all the great volunteers at WRIR and all our supporters and listeners, we appreciate everybody listening. Until next week, we hope that you will be kind to yourselves, kind to each other, to the animals, and to the planet. But don't be silent, because silence is the voice of complicity. We wish you peace.